Let's be honest. Buying cannabis shouldn't be complicated, sketchy, or low quality. That's why I want to tell you about Mood.com. That's M-O-O-D.com. Mood ships federally legal cannabis straight to your door. No medical card, no hassle. And here's the kicker. The quality is better than anything you'll find at your local dispensary. Yeah, I said it. Whether you're into edibles, concentrates, flower, or just looking to explore, you'll find it all at Mood. And it's not just the variety that makes them stand out. Every product is sourced from small, American-owned family farms that care deeply about what they grow. It's cannabis you can trust, delivered discreetly, and ready to elevate your mood. And because you're a listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just head to Mood.com, that's M-O-O-D.com, to get started.
Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
And what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to the first Wind Up podcast of 2025. Happy New Year, everybody. It is officially January 2nd as we're getting this posted and out into the airwaves, looking at a fresh start to a fresh new year. It's weird that it's 2025 already. It feels like 2024 went by, we all blinked, and here we are, staring a new year down the pipeline. And what I love to do at the start of each year with our show is kind of dive into the things that we are looking forward to and kind of tie it, you know, of course, try and tie it back to what we saw occur through the prior year and kind of where the momentum is taking us in terms of the wine industry, hospitality, Napa, all of those kinds of things. So we're going to dive into that today. Before we get into it, of course, we always have a few announcements to get through. So we're going to dive into those real quick. First and always foremost, thank you so much for continuing to listen, download, like, and subscribe to the show. Please continue doing all of those things and sharing it with your other wine-loving friends. You can follow us at MTGA Wines. On any of our social networks where we post this, we've actually started posting the podcast on X, the social network formerly known as Twitter. You can find us on YouTube, The Book of Face, as well as Instagram, at MTGA Wines will be our handle for all of those. Be sure, if you have a quick moment, to rate and review the show wherever you're consuming it. Be sure to like, subscribe, and follow it as well. That helps just kind of with the algorithm and getting it all out there and making sure that we kind of extend its reach to other wine lovers like yourselves out and about. So thank you all so much, so much for doing that. We are still and continuing to be brought to you by Premier Crew. That's Premier, C-R-U, clothing.com. You can still go get yourself 20% off your first order when you head to the website. That's premiercrewclothing.com. All kinds of fun, kitschy t-shirts and things that are currently available. There's going to be some new merch next quarter as well. So it's a good thing to kind of jump on board with and dive into. Last and certainly not least, for those of you that are on our mailing list in our wine clubs, all of that good stuff for MTGA Wines, you can basically set your calendar to the next wine club release, which is going to be at the end of this month. We're going to be sending out that notification. We have things like our Cab Franc coming back out, our single barrel Merlot, some of our kind of fun library wines that we'd love to get out there. So that'll all be coming your way here soon at the end of January and into the month of February. Very, very excited for a new round of wines and releases to make their way back out into the world this year. For any and all information on kind of what we do on the wine side of things, you can head to mtgawines.com. That is also where you can submit questions for our monthly Q&A. If you listened to last week's episode at the end of December, we had a few great questions and we try and address them as best we can as we get to the end of each month. We kind of compile things from all of our social networks, from comments, from people sliding on into our DMs, and also folks that are out at the winery, and do those Q&A episodes at the end of every month. So if you would like to have a question of yours answered, do any one of those things, slide into our DMs, head to our website, mtgawines.com. You can scroll down on the homepage there, and there's a little email form that you can fill out to submit your questions directly to me so that they can be answered here on the show to the best of my lovely ability. I think that's all we got. Let's go ahead and just dive right into the rest of the episode here today. Now, I mentioned that this is going to be kind of what we're looking forward to in 2025. And this is going to be really based on a conversation that I had with a few friends as I was playing Seventh Wheel at a little gathering on December 23rd. Big shout out to Alex and Priya for hosting. It was great to hang out with their family, a few friends, their kids, and just kind of like hang out. Brittany, the HBIC, my better half, had already headed out of the valley to go to Reno to visit her folks. So I was kind of flying solo. It was nice just to hang out and, you know, decompress a little bit during the holiday season. As we know, it can always be a little stressful at times as we all try and bounce around from one family gathering to another, go to friends' places. You know, obviously, the football season, the stress of playoff football when it comes to college or what's happening in the NFL. Who knows why you're stressed out during the holidays? Could be any one of those things, right? But it's a great little release. But over the course of the evening, we started diving into a conversation about the industry as a whole, kind of where it's at, and frankly, where it's headed. What is it doing? What is happening? And it was really centered around, you know, getting people interested in wine, whether it's the younger generation or continuing to promote Napa as a whole, whatever the case may be. And I think what was really great about this conversation, and it is kind of insulated because all of us were involved in the wine industry in one way or another. Two of us in the room were winemakers. We had three other salespeople, plus two others that owned a retail shop up in the Pacific Northwest. So you had a lot of different kind of perspectives coming in from the production side and from the sales and marketing side of things as well. And we agreed, I think, on basically every point that we all had. And a lot of it was kind of centered around, you know, what do you think your winery needs? The business that you're representing or the one that you own or are working for, you know, what are the things that are going to make that business successful? Because obviously, you know, what works for one might not work for another, right? Just kind of the way it goes. You have to kind of throw stuff at the wall, see what sticks, and then evolve from there. There have been plenty of things that we've tried that frankly just haven't worked. And we've had to adapt and adjust and move on to the next thing from there. Whether that's, you know, what we do in social media, whether it's the podcast, whether it's our winemaking techniques, you know, there's always things that we're trying to kind of get better at and continue to evolve. But as it pertains to kind of picking up where we left off at the end of this last year, I think, at least from my perspective, there was a lot of great momentum. You know, we talked a little bit about the numbers and kind of the business side of things, and we've done that a lot over the last 6 months because of just the state of the industry, and that's kind of what everybody is talking about right now. And there, you know, as we've mentioned, if you've happened to miss some of those episodes, there has been quite a lot of doom and gloom. Like, there's a lot of people that are in really tight spots, ourselves included. And there are some of us that are very, very pessimistic about the state of the industry and what really is going to be possible as we move forward into this new year. There are others that are cautiously optimistic, like myself. And that's largely because of where we ended up during the latter half of 2024. Now, the main point of like conversation, and a lot of it's kind of like big business trends. We talked about like the downturn in sales of alcohol, how wine is still third fiddle to beer and liquor in particular. I mean, keep in mind, like there are not a lot of people that drink a lot of wine in this country. It is still beer and cocktails. That's what we do best in the great old US of A. Wine is very, very much an afterthought, and that is still very much the case. And that was kind of the route that I took during this conversation, is that there is so much untapped potential for the wine industry. And I truly feel as though we cannot get out of our own way 9 times out of 10. And I want to, you know, kind of dive into that a little bit, because it ties into, I think, everything that we talked about in terms of bringing new customers into the fold, retaining people that are currently on our mailing lists and our big Napa or just wine fans in general. And there are a few things that I really kind of tried to key into. And I'll try and tackle some of the other opinions of the folks that I was hanging out with as well. Now, first, you know, when we talk about bringing people in and trying to tap into like new markets, let's say we're trying to convince more beer drinkers to try wine every once in a while, or you're just trying to figure out what like a new generation wants in terms of Gen Z, and as they're coming into, you know, drinking age and having disposable income, how do we get them into wine? It's the same conversation that we had with millennials. It's the same conversation all these wine businesses had with Gen X and boomers and every other generation that's come before. This is not a new conversation, but the topics have changed, if that makes sense, because every generation kind of has its own vibe, what they're interested in, what really matters to them, of course. And prior generations, you know, have really keyed into kind of like the collectability and the prestige and kind of the pomp and the circumstance of, you know, the wine industry and living very vicariously through these fancy bottles of wine, where younger generations are really keying in more into the stories, the farming, the what these businesses are kind of doing for the communities and how they are a part of these communities. So there's a little bit more of a kind of, I would say, emotional tie-in for the younger generations, where maybe it's more of a financial tie-in for older generations. Obviously, that's not 100% the case. There are always exceptions, but that's kind of like the broad, you know, 36,000 foot view that we are seeing. You know, and it's obviously a generalization, but it gives you a good idea as a wine business that if you're moving in one direction or the other, you're either going with the tide or against it, right? That makes sense. So a lot of this really boiled down to, how do you engage with people? How do you, you know, garner some sort of favor? How do you try and find airtime with a small segment of the wine drinking population that drinks an overwhelming majority of the wine? On top of that, how do you try and key into people that maybe enjoy wine, but just aren't that into it? They'd rather have a beer or a cocktail. How do you bring more people into the fold and engage with them? Now, the reason why I think engagement, this is something that goes back to like OG social media marketing, right? As, you know, post MySpace, going into the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Let's be honest. Buying cannabis shouldn't be complicated, sketchy, or low quality. That's why I want to tell you about Mood.com. That's Mood.com. Mood ships federally legal cannabis straight to your door. No medical card, no hassle. And here's the kicker. The quality is better than anything you'll find at your local dispensary. Yeah, I said it. Whether you're into edibles, concentrates, flower, or just looking to explore, you'll find it all at Mood. And it's not just the variety that makes them stand out. Every product is sourced from small, American-owned family farms that care deeply about what they grow. It's cannabis you can trust, delivered discreetly, and ready to elevate your mood. And because you're a listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just head to Mood.com. That's Mood.com to get started.
Instagram world of social media. And I remember, you know, managing many, many accounts for many, many wineries for Boisse Family Estates. And the question I always got as the digital marketing guy was like, how do we create this viral moment? How do we go viral? And anyone who knows anything about that kind of marketing, you don't just go viral. You know, you can take a formula of some sort and be like, you know, you might get some good hits. Some of you out there, this is a great video that we did like a spoof on. You can still find it. I lost access to it because we kind of did it through some friends and whatnot. But some of you might remember kind of the YouTube video, the shit white girls say video. And it's like, oh, that poor dog needs water. Oh, is that hummus? Oh, I had such a good sleep. Like very just like random silly things. So we naturally did a shit wine taster say. I think you can find it on like the Kona Grills YouTube page. That wasn't the original posting of it. We actually posted it through another what is now defunct social media company that went under. So we lost access to that video, but it got, you know, a few tens of thousands of views like right out of the gate. We caught a little bit of fire there. And especially in the early days of YouTube and like viral marketing, it was like, oh shit, like this is a little bit of a thing. This is kind of cool. Like we got a lot of eyeballs on this. And we kind of just, you know, grabbed onto the coattail of this already popular video and trend and just kind of spoofed it and, you know, revamped it for our own, you know, own fun and games, right? So you can do that. You can try and engage with people through kind of the kitschy marketing of the day. And, you know, what I always argued is it's probably easier to try and jump on board one of these trends that is already kind of moving forward rather than creating your own. And that's what you see in today's social world. Someone gets lucky and creates a viral moment, and then you see everybody else jump on the bandwagon and try and recreate that video for their own industry, for their own following. It happens all the time. These content creators are throwing so much content at you. You know, it's why doom scrolling through an Instagram or Twitter or TikTok or wherever you're at is so easy, because there's just so much content out there that every once in a while something catches fire and people really engage and jump on board, but it is few and far between. So how do you, as a small business or even a big wine business, create that engagement? And I think this is where you do have to tie into that emotional connection with your product. I think what many people, at least in my experience, and again, this is anecdotal, I don't know if I have any hard data to back this up, but in the conversations I have with thousands of people every year as we're tasting wine and introducing them to our wines or just talking about the industry as a whole, people are looking for more meaning in what they buy. They would rather purchase things that are more expensive, that are at a higher quality. I think we're starting to see a little bit of that. There's a lot of us, and I'm definitely one of those people. Like, if I'm wearing a jacket or a hat, I want that jacket or hat to last me 10, 20 years. I'm not going to buy a new one every other year because I can. I'd rather buy something that's high quality and spend a little bit of extra, knowing that as long as I don't, you know, tear it up or, you know, do something silly, that it's going to last me a good long time. That quality is everything, right? But that quality can only get you so far, because there's a lot of people that make good jackets or good hats or great wine, for that example. There's a lot of great options when it comes to wine. So when does quality, so quality has a glass ceiling to it, because there's a lot of good stuff out there, okay? Now, some of it can be kind of exclusive. You could have the nice fancy watch. I don't have a fancy watch on right now, but you could have the fancy watch or shoes or the really nice car, and it might be a limited edition and really nice. It might be hard to get. You might have to, like for wine, you might have had to be on a mailing list for X number of years or on an allocation list, and you can only get 3 bottles of it, and that's it. There's nothing else. But we've talked about this before on the show. Exclusivity only gets you so far too right now. Because some of the most exclusive high-end wines in the world, whether you're talking about Domaine Romani Conti, a Chateau Petrus, any of the first growths in Bordeaux or Grand Crus of Burgundy, high-end Barolos from Italy, the cult wines of Napa Valley like your Screaming Eagles, you can go online and buy them secondhand on any number of sites. Yeah, maybe you're not buying it from the winery, and there might be a little bit of risk purchasing it from a third party, but if you really want it, you can get it. It's not hard to find a lot of things that are ultra exclusive these days. In fact, it's really difficult to find exclusivity and something that is truly like, oh, there's like a gatekeeper here. You know, it's really easy to find high-end shit these days. In the world, in a global, you know, internet-based world that we live in, it's not that hard to track down this stuff. So exclusivity at a certain point plays a role, but probably isn't going to be the defining characteristic either to really connect with people in this day and age, because frankly, it's just too easy to find what you're looking for, right? So what do you do when you look at this new year and trying to figure out how are we attracting people and what is going to be attractive to them to bring them into the fold? It really, for me, it lands on building an emotional connection, an actual personal like relationship, and building brand advocacy. You want people to talk about you. You want people to be like, hey, we had a great time with this dude in this cave. And by the way, I heard you're going to Napa. You need to look him up. And if you don't, you're going to miss out. You need people to hype you up. That is the That is the best viral marketing that you can possibly get. And you can't buy it, right? You have to prove yourself. The proof is in the pudding. It's pure, unadulterated consumer reviews. It is a fantastic way, because how many of us have talked to somebody? Actually, the hat I'm wearing are MTGA hats. I wear this hat probably 6 days a week, either this gray one or the black one. And it's from Big Truck Hat Company up in Truckee, a relatively local Northern California brand. My wife's from the area. We've had friends that have lived up there, family that's lived up there. We're like, hey, if we're going to create some swag, you know, we're not just going to order the cheapest, you know, piece of garbage that you can get from abroad, from whatever sweatshop it's being made in. Like, hopefully we can find something that's pretty high quality, you know, made from something here in the U.S. I mean, they were established in 2010. You can look them up, Big Truck Hat Company. They do a great job, and their products are really, really nice. And I have nothing against imports. I mean, if you're buying stuff from abroad, that's totally fine. But you just want to make sure that the quality is good. Again, I'm talking about quality versus quantity here, and paying a little bit more. So when it's a $40 hat, yeah, that's expensive for a trucker hat. But damn it, nice. It fits well. I've had one of these go through like 4 or 5 harvests, and it still hasn't completely fallen apart. So I know the stitching's still intact. It's way dirtier than the one that's on my head, but it's built to last. That's a great thing. And so, and then what's even better about this is that if you're in Northern California, you find yourself in or around the greater Tahoe, Reno area, you see someone else with a Big Truck hat, they're like, oh, hey, nice. Like, people recognize it. It's kind of a cool, fun thing, right? But there's some emotional connection tied to this crazy little thing that's on my head for no reason other than I love what they do as a brand. Their hats are awesome. It's great quality. And when people ask us about them, I'm happy to hype them up as a company that we've worked with, and we paid them good money to create these for us, right? It's a good thing. It's great. It feels nice. It makes me all nice and warm and fuzzy. It's like going and buying, you know, maybe a hat from your favorite sports team. Sure, they break your heart every season, but damn it, you're a fan. And it feels nice to put that good quality wool hat on and get after it, you know? My 7 3/8 number that I have in my head anytime, because these aren't the fitted ones. I try and buy like the fitted hats whenever I can. These are just like the snapback ones. But I know if I'm like at a, you know, good sports arena, or there's a cool hat that I like, and it's fitted and it's 7 3/8, like I'm getting it. It looks great. We just did that actually when we were down in Southern California and in Palm Desert area. We went to a Coachella Valley Firebirds like AAA hockey game, and they have great swag. And sure enough, they had a hat in my size. I'm like, oh, shut up and take my money. This is a great hat, good quality. Know the company, great team. It's a fun hockey game. Let's do this. But I digress. So building that emotional connection and brand advocacy. And what did I just, you know, talk about? Just in the example of hats. There's a story behind them. We were at the game. It's a place that we love around Lake Tahoe. And this company is based in Truckee. It's like, okay, like there's a story behind it. There's something to reach out and grab onto versus walking into, you know, some department store or ordering something online. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm in the market for a hat. I need a new hat. I don't care if it's just for working in the yard or, you know, wearing out on the golf course or on the boat. Like, I just need a new hat. You know, isn't it better to buy something that actually you're like, oh, that's cool. It looks good. It fits well. It supports something that I enjoy. And that's kind of like, that's a big win if you can hit check all those boxes. If you just go on, if you go to Amazon.com, you're like, ball cap, and you just buy the first one you see, like, there's no emotional attachment to that. You're like, this is just, you know, function over form, really. I just need something that keeps the sun out of my eyes. But with something like this that's on my head, it's like, not only does it keep the sun out of my eyes, but I have a story about our brand, our label, about the company that made it, why it's important to us, why we like them as a company, and why we bought swag from them rather than going through anybody else, right? That means a little something. And I think if I'm, you know, testing the water here and kind of gauging it correctly, that means more to people now than ever. So as we're looking forward and starting this new year, and what I think I'm looking forward to most is truly building more of these connections with people. In fact, we're doing something that's a big push every January through the Napa Valley Vintners to do our Napa Neighbor program, where if you live, you know, within the county of Napa and you have that on your ID, there are a bunch of wineries out here that will offer you complimentary or at least a great deal on what is their normal tasting fee. They'll say, hey, yeah, please, if you're a local, come on out and be a part of this wine industry for the day. We don't care what you do. We don't care who you work for. Just if you're a Napa local, come on out and let's do this thing. And we try and support the local community as best we can with that. And we've gotten, just today, I think we've gotten a half a dozen folks that, actually, no, more than that, probably closer to a dozen or 15 people are like, hey, yeah, we want to come out and see what you guys are all about. We've never heard of you. You know, we know where you're based, kind of, but let's see what's going on. And then we can continue to share our story and this experience with people and build these brand advocates, so to speak. So what we're all looking for, and as this kind of conversation continued through this point in the evening a couple weeks ago, it was like we're all looking for like that thing, you know, that viral moment. Like, how do we get these folks to like latch on to these brands that we either own or work for? And that emotional connection and kind of this path to advocacy is huge. Cannot be understated. I think especially if you're a small label, you're someone like us. You know, we were talking about Chorus and Vineyards, where a friend of mine works, even Hall. Vineyards are obviously much bigger with what they do. Signorello as well, a few others. Copper Cane, which is Joe Wagner's, you know, kind of newer conglomerate after he sold Meiomi, although I think he had it at that time. But anyway, you know, we're talking from a lot of different avenues, from a lot of producers that go from really, really small to really, really big. And everyone was kind of on the same trend, which is kind of the interesting thing about the wine industry. Now, obviously, if you're a Joe Wagner character, or, you know, a brand like Meiomi, which he sold, and you're just that big, it's probably going to be a little different, right? You still want to tie into people. You still want to connect with people. But when you're trying to be, you know, in every Costco or grocery store or whatever chain or outlet in the country versus like only found in certain small locales like we are, it's a different game you have to play, right? So you still have to kind of tweak and adapt these things and go from there. The next thing we talked about during this conversation was pricing. And I know this is something that we talked about. Shout out to Mike back east, who was talking to, who had the questions earlier this fall or late summer regarding like grape pricing and potentially seeing a drop in price, wine prices in Napa. And I unfortunately, you know, gave the bad news that that's incredibly unlikely, just given the cost and expense of making wine in this day and age, because it's not just the grapes, it's all the other stuff, right, as well. I mean, shoot, my bottle costs are going up 30 or 40% this year, so that sucks, but here we are. And I think there is, however, there's something to it. And I might have alluded to this during a couple episodes ago, during one of the episodes, because this little like hiccup that we're seeing where sales are tough, it's harder to move wine, especially of certain price points, you know, demand, if it is truly dropping and we continue to see it for, like, what is the definition of a recession? It's technically, you know, your GDP is negative for what, like 2 quarters, 3 quarters, something like that. Like, it's not a full year, but it's a decent cycle, right? So if we continue to see that in the wine industry, you know, and we enter kind of like recession, like correction kind of territory, I think the same thing will apply, where you're going to see a lot of people that just can't make it. They're going to just fade off into the sunset. You may see wines that are a great price and a great value pop up here or there. In fact, that's something that we are trying to do very, very diligently, or create some wines that are more affordable. You know, there is a certain kind of lower limit to that we can't go past, because then we'd be losing money if we don't price our wines correctly. But I believe that you can still make some wine at a really reasonable price. Not everything has to be $125, $175, $300, $500 a bottle. you can find some stuff here and there. Are you going to be able to get Tokalon Cabernet for $50 a bottle? Probably not, right? That's probably not going to be the case. Could you find a second label somewhere that's probably solid Napa Cabernet? Maybe it's from Oakville, maybe it's from somewhere, but it's good and it's, you know, around $60 to $75. Probably. You might still be able to find that. It's kind of the new era, I think, of like the second label kind of thing, where wineries are going to start cutting stuff from the herd a little bit more diligently and saying, hey, we're going to focus on our really high-end stuff and still make that because that's what pays the bills. But let's create this kind of subset of wine that's going to be aged differently. Stylistically, it's going to be a little different. And it's hopefully going to be cheaper to make so that way you guys can pay less for it. Sure, it's not going to be the belle of the ball, but it's going to be a really great wine. This is largely why we have our Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon, our Grand Cask Cabernet Sauvignon, kind of the two high-end wines that we make in terms of our cab program. And then we have our Diversum, which is way more affordable, but it's only aged for a year. It's actually aged in a lot of stainless steel. It's done, you know, in a way that is, frankly, very unique for Napa. But it cuts a lot of the costs by not having to buy new barrels, by not having to age it as long. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we can do that are cost-saving methods to reduce the price of certain wines. Now, the character of that wine is going to be very, very different because it follows a very different, you know, winemaking path than the overwhelming majority of wines and Cabernet specifically in Napa. So when it comes to this price point thing, and I mean, this also goes to all the way to like hotel rooms and how expensive they are, to tasting fees and what the buying expectations of certain wineries are. So it's not just the price per bottle anymore that people are worried about. It's the entire trip, right? Because if you're paying $400 to $600 a night, and that's about as cheap as you can find in Napa, not necessarily, there are still some great deals to be found out there. But there's a period where it's like, shoot, I mean, the basic motels were going for $400 a night. Places that were like okay places were asking quite a bit of money. So if you're going to be here for, you know, four nights, and let's say you're spending, you know, $1,600 on just the hotel, like that's a decent chunk of change for a lot of people. So, you know, is that going to remedy itself? Our tasting fee is going to stop being $125, $150 a person. You know, are they going to, like, there's a lot of people that just don't waive tastings anymore because, like, this costs us money and we're going to charge people money for tastings because this is a cost center. So we need to get some revenue out of it. You have folks that are saying, I mean, this is something I disagree with totally, is they're saying, hey, if you're going to come visit us, yes, you have to pay for the tasting, but also there's like a 3 or 6 bottle minimum. Like, you can't, like, you have to buy wine. Like, we're not going to host you if you don't buy wine. It's a thing, and it sucks. And this is where I kind of got into the, yeah, I think where all of us in this conversation got to the point where, at least this is where I got into it, where I'm like, the wine industry can't get out of its own way sometimes. Where you get through this, like, kind of exclusive, smug attitude of like, oh, you better be buying or you're going to have to spend top dollar. I don't think that that's a good way to market this place. Because we've already seen many, many people around the country and heard from many, many people say, yes, we would love to come out, but it's fucking expensive. And maybe we used to come out every year or every other year, but now it's more like every 3 or every 5, you know, if it's at all. Because now there are people that are like, we would love to travel. We've been to Napa a couple times. Let's go to other places, right? And that's totally fair, too. I'm not going to fault people if they want to, you know, dive into new experiences and stuff of that nature. Like, that's totally fine. Totally fine. But if the industry continues to alienate people because we think we're just higher than thou, that's a huge problem. And that's where I think a lot of that pricing kind of attitude comes from, especially with new brands in the valley that think they can come out of the gate and charge a boatload for a brand no one's ever heard of. Like, I don't give a shit who's making your wine. I don't care if it's a Melka or a Heidi or a TRB or whatever. Like, that's fine. Anyone with enough commas in their bank account can hire any one of those winemakers and make a great wine. that doesn't necessarily make you special. It doesn't necessarily give you a story. It doesn't tie anyone into what you do. You're just throwing money at a problem. Now, what you do outside of that in building some of these emotional connections that we're talking about, that's what's going to really decide the fate and the future of your brand, in my humble opinion. So what I'm, you know, kind of going back to what we're looking forward to in 2025, what I'm really looking forward to is trying to hammer that home, not just for ourselves, but with other kind of like-minded people, and say like, hey, you know, this cohort of wineries that we associate with and that we love to support, these are the folks that are really great. And not only are you going to find some amazing wines there, but you're going to have friends for life if you get to know them. That's what I'm looking forward to this year, is building more of these connections with people, not just here locally, but for some of you that listen to this show. And I am inherently a, believe it or not, because it's, you know, as I'm talking into a microphone that gets posted all over the airwaves on the internet, I am inherently a pretty shy, introverted dude. I don't like hanging out with big crowds a lot of the time. I'm very, very comfortable in my home office here. You know, it can be very exhausting for me. And it's taken me a long time to practice this and get out and be willing to be extroverted in certain moments to connect with people. It's just how I am. It's how I'm programmed. But it's, I understand the importance of it, and I want to be able to be there for people. And I think there are a lot of folks out there that just don't. And they're far more extroverted than I am. They're really great salespeople. They're really good at building connections. They're really good at doing some of this stuff. But they just, there's not, it's very cold. For some reason, it can feel very cold and very transactional. And I don't think you can run a wine business in this valley saying, hey, you should be thankful that you're on our allocation list, because not everyone gets to buy three bottles of this. That's some bullshit, in my opinion. So this fresh start we're looking at, and how we're continuing to try and connect with people. I mean, shoot, that's what this show has really been about. And it has more so been about kind of the transparency of the wine industry, the business side of it, how it works. You know, for those of you that have been listening for a while, you know that. Those of you that might be a little newer, you know, you've probably listened to a lot of drama over the last few weeks. It gets better, I promise. I like to think it's a little more entertaining. But this is where I love kind of diving into the meat and potatoes of the industry and trying to bring people into our world and say, hey, here's a winemaker that's just out here talking shit on his own little podcast that he set up in the office of his house. He's got a friggin' Critical Role in BlizzCon, Blizzard Entertainment, crazy poster behind him. He's got his, you know, the first fish he ever caught in Baja and a Gonzaga University flag hanging back here. You know, half the time you can hear me sipping on my coffee, like it's nothing super professional, but damn it, I want it to be honest and authentic, and I want to try and connect with the people that are listening to this. And that's what any small business, wine industry or not, needs to be doing. And that's what I think that this fresh start and looking at 2025 and kind of the trends that we saw come and go through 2024 and kind of where we're at right now and what opportunities really lay in front of us as an industry, this is it. Like, you gotta be very forward facing. You've gotta be building right now. You've gotta be. I think I mentioned this a few episodes ago because my sister listened to it and she's like, that was the best point that you've had on all the episodes I've listened to. Thank you, Nelly, I appreciate it. Was, if you're just sitting here waiting for people to come to you, you're doing it wrong. And on top of that, you're going to be in a lot of trouble at a certain point. Because if you think that you're just higher than now, that you can hire a great winemaking name and buy really expensive fruit from, quote, the best vineyards, end quote, according to who knows, right? That's not good enough anymore. especially when you can buy those wines whenever you want. If you've got the money and you want to buy Screaming Eagle, go buy it. It's not hard to find. It's just not. So that's the reality, right? You want to go buy Petrus, you can go do it. You can do it tomorrow. You can do it right now if you wanted to. You want to go find a little small brand from somewhere, there's a pretty good chance you can go online and find their wine somewhere, whether it's through their own site, maybe through a retailer somewhere. You might have to pay for shipping because them is the ropes, but you can probably find it. What is going to keep you coming back, realistically? This is a question I think everyone should consider about like any product or thing that you buy in this day and age. It's like, what's going to keep you coming back? Is it like a one-time purchase and it's just something you need? Like, do you need that new, you know, power tool? And you're like, once I got that, I'm set. I don't need to buy another one unless it breaks or whatever. Fine. That's different. But when it comes to like a consumer good, like wine, that's something you enjoy and you enjoy it regularly. What is the thing that keeps you coming back? What is it? Is it just the label? Is it just the price point? Is it the sales rep or person you met that was representing the brand? Was it an event you went to? You know, is it the variety itself and just love whatever Cabernet, you know, Cabernet, Syrah, Merlot, whatever it is. You just love that grape and they do a good job with it. Or is it some, more likely, right? It's some amalgamation of all those things, you know? Price and the perceived value in terms of its quality is a big deal. Whether or not you've made a personal connection with that brand is a big deal when it comes to consumer good, right? That's just how it is. And when you can actually interface with the people that are intimately involved with producing that product, that only enhances it for everybody. And the wine industry needs, if we're going to really capitalize on this fresh start in this new year, we need to lean more into that transparency side of things, let people know what is actually going into our winemaking. We need to engage with people on an emotional level with our story, what we're doing, and how we go about our business. That's what we got to do. The old days of marketing are behind us, and the industry is always 10 years behind the rest of the world, because the last Napa Valley, last like Vintner meeting about like social media and marketing, they're like, hey, like here's how Instagram works, y'all. You're like, cool, that's old technology. If you're a wine business right now, if you're any business right now, and you're on social media and you don't know how it works yet, you got a problem. I'm not saying you have to be present on social media to promote your business, but if you are and you're flying blind or it's something you want to be a part of and you're just unsure how to go about it, whew, that hurts. That hurts my soul because it's not hard. I mean, I'm terrible at it, but I know I'm terrible at it. And frankly, I'm okay with that. That is a big pill I'm willing to swallow. That's fine. But at least there's some understanding of how it works, right? The fact that people are just now figuring out that Instagram's a thing in the wine industry is hilarious to me. It's just so funny. So this is a very, very good fresh start for this industry. I think that there's going to be, you know, a continued kind of correction in how things and how people and brands operate. And I hope for the small ones out there that they jump on some of these trends and run with them. I think gone are the days of being exclusive and all hoity-toity about how good and prestigious your wines are. There's a lot of fucking great wine out there, and some of it's not coming from Napa. So if that's the case, how are you actually going to make some noise in this crazy echo chamber of an industry? That's what people really need to be looking at with this fresh start, and they got to find a way to cut themselves from the herd and say, hey, this is how we stand out. This is how we're different. And this is why that matters to us, and hopefully why it matters to you. All right. Whew. That was a lovely soapbox to stand on to get this year started. I hope that that made some sort of coherent sense. I feel like every once in a while when I dive into some of these episodes and topics, I get on a roll and I just kind of keep going. I try to continually tie it back to kind of the main topic of like looking forward and what we ought to be doing as an industry. And I think what is going to be beneficial, especially when you're looking at the first couple days of the year and how we can improve on what we did the year prior. It was a beautiful moment when my first jobs and seller masters I worked for in the industry. The main thing I took from him was, you know, you go into work every day, just try and get better at one thing. Doesn't matter what it is. Could be anything. If it's coiling a hose faster, that's great. If it's putting the pump together faster, that's awesome. If it's cleaning a barrel, awesome. If it's driving the tractor, even better. But just try and get a little bit better at one little thing every day. You don't got to change the world all at once. It's like if you're Oregon against Ohio State and you're down bad. You're not going to score four touchdowns all at once. You're going to have to score one, and then you're going to have to score another, and then you're going to have to end up losing, you know, 40-something to 20-something anyway. So sometimes it just doesn't work out. But you got to start small, and hopefully it turns into something big, and you get to go from there. That was probably a really poor example, but I don't like the Ducks, so there you go. Have an excellent rest of your day, y'all. Happy, happy New Year. Cannot thank everyone who's been tuning into the show over the last year and a half. Actually, almost 2 years. It'll be 2 years in March. So just a couple short months away from the two-year anniversary of the show. We have some very fun things that are on the docket as we get into this new year. Very excited to share all those things with you. Cannot wait to get a new season of episodes under our belt. This is officially season 3, y'all. Episode number 41, all said and done. We've done a lot of these. It's kind of crazy. Anyway, have a lovely, lovely, lovely weekend. We will see you next week on the Wind Up Podcast. Be sure to like, rate, review the show. Follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. That's YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. Go check out Premier Crew. That's CRUclothing.com. Use code Premier for 20% off your first order. And that's all I got. Y'all have a good one.